ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यं एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। हरि ओम् एव्रिबडि। लास्ट् वीक् वि स्टार्टेड् दिस् ब्यूटिफुल् चाप्टर् चाप्टर् 14 एण्ड् द रीज़न् दट् भगवान् स्टार्ट्स् चाप्टर् 14 इस् टु वन् थिङ्ग् इस् टु एक्स्प्लेन्। He said in chapter 13 that this creation happens because of Sanyoga. Sanyoga, a union, a joining of Purusha and Prakriti. So to explain exactly how that Sanyoga or union happens, he starts chapter 14. Also, he had told Arjun way back in chapter 2, Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna. Oh, hey Arjun, rise above the three gunas. But at that time, he had not explained fully what the gunas were. So he needed to explain that. If we want to transcend something, if we want to rise above something, we need to know what it is. Otherwise, how do we rise? So that is another reason that chapter 14 begins. And it sort of answers five, it takes care of five topics. The nature of Prakriti, the gunas, the what is the, you know, manifestation of the gunas, how do the gunas bind, and then which guna is predominant in me. It is a chapter of self. Every chapter is self-evaluation, but this is even more, so that we know which guna is predominant in us, and then what are the manifestations of that those gunas while we are alive, and then what happens at time of death. So to explain all these points, Bhagwan has started chapter 14. And as we see, he did not wait for Arjun to ask a question. There is no in the beginning. There is a question later on, but not in the beginning. There isn't a question. So Bhagwan himself is wanting to tell Arjun. This is what it indicates. Bhagwan himself wants to tell. So he says, again, I shall tell you. That's why Bhuyaha, again, I will tell you. Means I have told you this before, Arjun, but I'm now going to tell you about that supreme reality. And okay, is it the same path? No, I'm going to tell you a different path, how to reach that supreme reality. So what am I going to tell you? He says, Param Uttamam Jnanam. That's what he has said. Param and Uttamam, the adjectives to Jnanam. I'm going to give you the supreme and the best knowledge. So I told you supreme has got two connotations. One beyond which there is nothing else. One which is a point of no return. And Uttamam, the best knowledge it is, because one type of knowledge gives us material prosperity, which can end at any time. The better knowledge, better knowledge than that, is that which gives us the heavens, which has a more permanence to it than the mortal world, but it is not absolutely permanent. It is also temporary, and we have to come back once the merits are over. So again, it is a point of return and it is temporary, but this best knowledge, he calls it, because it is permanent. It's absolutely permanent. And from there, you never, nobody comes back having reached that. And how do I reach that? Yajnyatva. Just by knowing that Supreme Self, I reach that Supreme Self. And then what will happen if I reach, if I come to know this, then what happens? Siddhim, param siddhim gataha. So you gain the highest siddhi. And here siddhi doesn't mean supernatural powers. It means cessation of all sorrows, complete cessation of sorrows and paramananda prapti. So attainment of supreme bliss, which nothing else can give us. And that's why Bhagwan is now telling this again. We also saw that this verse indicates the Anubandha Chatushtaya. We have studied that Adhikari, Vishaya, Hetu, Prayojana, and Sambandha. Adhikari is Munayaha, one who can think. Thought is, you know, intellect is very essential to think in the right direction. Munayaha, and then what is the Vishaya? Jnanam, Uttamam, and Param. So that best knowledge and supreme knowledge is what the Vishaya is. And Hetu, why are you telling me this knowledge? Because this knowledge is what will give you moksha or mukti. And then how knowing this, like how, what is the relationship? What is the sambandha? What is the connection between the Vishaya, the subject matter, and the goal? It is knowledge alone, knowing, yajnyatva, having known, not having done something or whatever, having known, that is the sambandha. So this is how it indicates the Anubandha Chatushtaya. In the next verse, Bhagwan glorifies this knowledge once again. He says that the one who gains this knowledge, he gets sadharmya to me. And here I told you, sadharmya is not similarity. You don't become similar to Bhagwan. You actually become Bhagwan. You actually merge with him. Okay? And that's why it is final. So this word sadharma. So he says that is the goal. And the reason he's telling that is to tweak the interest of the student. Because, you know, now the student, oh my God, I get to merge with you, you know. So that's why he's doing it. And then he goes on to explain this sanyoga between Purusha and Prakriti. Bhagwan says, Mama Yonihi Mahat Brahma. This Mahat Brahma is Prakriti. Mahat is big and Brahma is not Brahman. It is that which holds. You know, Brahmayar means womb, and that womb is holding the world. So we'll see, we saw that, but we'll see it again. So Mahat big, the reason it is called as big womb, because this womb can give rise to all kinds of beings. I told you, humans can give birth only to a human baby. Animals can give birth only to their own species. You know, cat only can give birth to cat, dog to dog, etc. But this Prakriti, this womb is so huge that it can produce humans, animals, birds, reptiles, you name it. It can do it. That's why this Mahat word is used, big. And yoni is the womb. And how does it hold? How does Prakriti? It is Brahma here is Maya or Prakriti. How does it hold? Because Prakriti is the one that initiates action. How is the samsar held? We do actions for which there are results, and to exhaust those results, we have to again come back into the world. And that's how this sansar is going on. That's why she is the one that is holding it, because the pure self is not doing anything and it is not even making us do anything. That's what we are studying in chapter 2. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. It doesn't kill and it doesn't ask anybody else to kill. So it's negation of doership and enjoyership. So the pure self doesn't do anything. Whatever is done by Prakriti, but without the seed that he says that I, tasmin garbham dadamyam, I put the seed, and putting the seed indicates the reflection. Reflection is happening of the pure consciousness in Prakriti. And when that reflection is at the level of the totality, it is called as Ishvara. And when it is, the next verse tells us, when it is at the level of the individual, we become Jiva. We are the Jivas. Okay. So this is what tells us that there is a pure consciousness and there is a reflection. And that reflection is extremely important now to understand the verse that we are going to be understanding today. So there is this pure self, which is absolutely free, non-doer, non-enjoyer, etc., etc., like the example I gave you, the sun, unattached, just illumining because that's its nature. It is not illumining more for satsang, less for crime, nothing of the sort, but that reflection is being formed in the bucket of water, the bucket indicating the gross body, water indicating the mind, the subtle body, and then that reflection is what is lighting up the room, and the reflection is what is taking all credit. I am the one that is lighting you up, forgetting that it has a double dependency. It has a dependency on the sun and it has a dependency on the bucket and the water. And this is this that seed, Bhagwan is saying, that when I reflect into Prakriti, that is how I put the seed in there. And then first the reflection happens, then the room gets lit up. So first I reflect and then she can now create. And the reason she can create is because she's made up of the three gunas, and we'll see that. So this is how this Sanyoga is happening. And then he says, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya Murtaya Sambhavatiya. So this Murtaya, Murti means form. All these forms are come out of these jivas, which whoever has a form. So animal form, jiva form, whatever has come from this Mahad Yonihi. So the mother is the Mahad Yoni, the womb, Prakriti, and Aham Pita, I am the father. That's how, because without me, she cannot do. I've told you that before also, like Santa Naneshwar says, it's like husband and wife. The husband doesn't do anything and the wife has to do all the work, but the wife will not do the work unless the husband permits. And this is what, unless the pure consciousness reflects in that Prakriti, she cannot act. She's not enlivened, she's inert. Prakriti is inert. Okay, so that is what we saw last time. And now we are on verse 5, we have read it. So what Bhagwan is then saying, Sattvam, Rajas, Tamam, Iti Gunaha, these gunas, which gunas? Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Prakriti Sambhavaha, they are born of Prakriti. So we'll see what is meant by born of Prakriti. Nibadnanti Mahabaho Dehe Dehinam Avyayam. Mahabaho word is used for Arjun here. Mahabaho, very strong. Bahu is arms, so very strong arm. The other meaning of Mahabaho also is whose hands reach their knees. There are some people, you know, if they stand up straight, Shivaji was one such person. The Maratha warrior. He was short. He wasn't a very tall person. He was short. But if he stood up and he held his hands straight, if normally we do, our hands don't reach our knees, but his did. And they say that the one whose hands reach the knees are very generous people. That's what it is said. So this Mahabaho has two connotations. One is that you're very strong. Because why? Because now Bhagwan is asking him to transcend. So he has to put in effort. So to put in effort to transcend, you know, to do something, I have to put effort. And I need to be strong. That's why Bhagwan is telling him, you are strong. You can do this. I'm explaining to you now what the gunas are. And I will tell you how they bind you. And now you have to transcend them. But you are a strong person. You are Mahabaho. You can do it. So this is why this Mahabaho word is used. Here are the two words that we need to, two words you can say, the gunas, because the gunas have now been mentioned, sattva, rajas and tamas. So we have to understand the gunas very well. How can we transcend if we don't understand what they are? And then we also have to understand very well, nibadnanti, bondage, they bind. So that bondage part also has to be understood very, very clearly. So let's start with sattva, rajas and tamas. Like I said to you, there's a lot of information on these gunas, which I have already given and said, but there may be new people. And also, like I said, Bhagwan himself said, again, I'm telling you, so I have to be absolved of that. This thing of again, tell you, what is she doing? Again, she's telling us, but Bhagwan himself is again telling, so sorry about that. So sattva, rajas and tamas are the three gunas. They should not be understood as adjectives to Prakriti. That is not how they're to be understood. They're to be understood as being Prakriti herself. So Prakriti equals Sattva plus Rajas plus Tamas. It is not like a blue flower, you know, where the blue is adjective to the flower, where blueness can fade, but the flower can remain. You know, a cloth we have. So we have a blue cloth, you know, then we put it in the washing machine. Then the cloth, the color fades, the cloth remains. So that is an adjective. So it's not like if the Sattva, Rajas, Tamas go away, the Prakriti is, you know, Prakriti will remain. Prakriti cannot remain because Prakriti is Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. That's number one. Secondly, what you have to understand is that Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, none of them can ever go to zero, even for a realized master. Okay, because all three are required for action. Even if an action is not being done, if a person is only say, I mean, action is inevitable because even if the person is not acting outside, he's eating, he's, you know, watching TV, maybe he's reading at home. So action that way is going on. And for action, all three are required. All right. I have told you many times that when I am speaking, the act of speech is coming from Rajoguna. The vocal cords are tamas. The body is made out of tamoguna. And the knowledge that is I'm giving out, what I have to speak, I know. So that knowledge is in the mind. That is coming from sattva guna. Okay. So these three gunas you see in the world. In general, in the world, there are three principles that each one of us sees. One is the principle of inertia. One is the principle of dynamism, and one is the principle of knowledge. So the principle of inertia comes from tamoguna. Principle of dynamism comes from rajoguna, and the principle of knowledge comes from sattvaguna. So the next point is these gunas can never be seen. So if we tell, you know, oh, Gurudev, just show us what sattva, no. No, even Guru cannot show us. God also cannot show us Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. But one of the definitions of Prakriti is that's why Karyanumeya means that which can be inferred. So these gunas are such that they can be inferred, but they can never directly be seen. Okay, so from these three principles, we infer that when we see a very lazy person, you know, procrastinate, all those descriptions are going to come. So when we see inertia, that's why body is coming from the tamasic aspect of all the elements. Therefore, body is tamoguni. Pranas are rajoguni because pranas are controlling all the action in the body. And mind, intellect stuff is coming from sattvaguna because mind is where the knowledge arises. When we hear something, even ordinary things, you know, some recipe, some driving lessons, whatever, that knowledge is arising in the mind. It is not arising in the body. The body does the action of driving or cooking, but the knowledge is coming from the mind. And that's why mind is a product of sattvaguna. So when you see this, if you look at animals, elephant is considered tamas, a horse is considered rajas, and a cow is considered sattva. So at the most, if you want to say, show me sattva, you can say, look at the cow, she's very sattvic. Look at the horse, you know, it sleeps while standing. That's how much rajoguni horse is. So you can only show the horse or the cow, but you cannot show sattva guna and rajoguna. Even in plants, pot, marijuana, tamas, you know, those fragrant, very, very fragrant flowers, jasmine, safa, we say in Marathi, champa, right? I think in Hindi, very which tickle the senses, that is rajas. And tulsi plant is sattva. So these three principles we see in animals, we see in plants, and we see in ourselves, in humans. And the inert world is all tamasic. It's all tamasic. There is no rajas and sattva over there. Why? Because the subtle body is not there. Okay. So we cannot see the gunas. We can only infer them. None of them can go to, even in a realized master, there is tamas. Otherwise that master could not have slept. The reason that we fall asleep every night is because of when tamas overpowers. So what happens is with the gunas is all three are there and one or the other at every point is predominating, is dominating. So when one dominates, the other two take a backseat. At night, when we are extremely sleepy, then tamas dominates, and then rajas and sattva, you know, even if I want to read or I'm watching TV, once I'm sleepy, I'll just fall asleep, which means tamas is dominating. Okay, so they only, one dominates and the other two remain dormant, kind of. And then the other one comes up and this one goes. When they are in perfect equilibrium, creation cannot happen. Creation doesn't happen. That is how creation starts. Creation starts when these gunas start moving. There is a, you know, halchal in Hindi. There's some sort of movement in the gunas. That equilibrium is disturbed. And that's how creation happens. So otherwise, if they're in complete equilibrium, there will be no creation. This is how these gunas have to be understood. Okay. Now, Bhagwan is saying here that they bind. So the question arises is, first of all, what exactly is bondage? And that is the topic that we are on in Vivek Chudamani, but we'll see bondage a little bit deeper here. So the question is, what is bondage? Second question is, who is getting bound? We have to find out who is getting bound, because Bhagwan is saying these are binding. That's why you transcend them. So there is, if you transcend the gunas, then you won't be bound. Okay. Then who is this you that is getting bound? And the last and most important question is bondage really real? That is a very, very important question. So these are the three questions that we have to now see. So let's see. Let's see the first, what is bondage? Okay, so let's see what's, as per Vivek Chudamani, the notion that I am the body is bondage, right? Remember, we just did it last Friday. Bhagavan Shankaracharya said, in anatma, when you have the sense of atma, means what? Body is anatma, body is inert, body is tamas. In that body, you have the idea of self. Self means what? I. So in the body, when you have that thought, it's not a thought, that I am the body, that is bondage. That is bondage. Okay. Now the question is, who exactly is getting bound? Who is Bhagwan saying these gunas bind? Okay, Bhagwan, who are you telling? Who are these gunas binding? So let's look at the body. Okay, let's see if the body is getting bound. Now, when the eyes see something, what will they see? Color and form. Okay, suppose, what is bondage? First, let's see what exactly means in that sense. But what is the meaning of being bound? Being bound, I was thinking about this, you know, like one who is in a prison, okay? Now he is bound. Why? Because he cannot get out of that prison cell. That is what bondage is, okay? Now in that sense, do I consider myself bound? Absolutely not. COVID or no COVID, I'm going to go out and I go for a walk and I do this and I do that. So I'm definitely not bound. And Bhagwan is saying they bind. So there is something which is getting bound, and what is it? Bhagwan Raman Maharshi gives a story. He says there was a person who was looking sideways, and then he was looking up, he was looking in front, and he was screaming, "Oh, please help me, help me, help me. I'm bound, I'm bound. I'm trapped in this room. Please help me." And then suddenly a person from behind came and tapped on his shoulder and said, "You are not bound. You are free. Just turn back. You're only looking sideways, front and up. Please turn back. Look, look, I came inside the room from the back. You are not bound." So there the looking behind is looking inside. That is what Bhagwan Raman Maharshi has always said. You say you are bound. Question, who is that who is bound? Who am I? I am bound. I say, I am bound. And that story is told when he says you look back. It doesn't mean that we have to physically look back. We have to look within ourselves. So now coming to the body, if the eyes see color and form, and if they were getting bound, then once I see one color, say, which I like, and now my eyes got bound in that, now they will never be able to see any other color. Because why? They got bound. What is bondage? a prison cell. He cannot get out of that cell. He is bound. Okay, in the room. Somebody locks me in a room. I'm bound in that room. So that way, if the eyes get bound in color which I like, blue, red, whatever, that means the eyes cannot move out and go into some other color, cannot give me the experience of any other color. So eyes are not getting bound. And with eyes go all the senses. So some sound which I like, if I like classical music, if I hear classical, that means I won't be able to hear any other music. Taste. If I taste, if I like sweet, and now my tongue got attached, bound by the sweet, then how will I taste spicy or salty or sour? I can't. So body is not getting bound. Okay, please understand this. This is very deep. Now, let's go to the pure self. The description of the pure self is Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta. Nitya, Shuddha, Nitya, Buddha, Nitya, Mukta. Nitya, Mukta, eternally free. Is the pure self getting bound? And other point is, the gunas are what is binding. Are there any gunas in the pure self? Om in our chart is beyond the gunas. That's why Arjuna is being told, transcend the gunas. That is how you will reach that Om. So in Om, the pure self, where there is no gunas, how will the pure self get bound? How will the pure self? Okay, body is not getting bound. Senses are not getting bound. Okay, maybe the mind is getting bound. Maybe mind is getting bound. Okay, so if the mind were to be getting bound, then when the mind also, when it likes some color or some taste, or say my child or my grandchild, that means that mind is bound in that grandchild. That means that mind cannot think of anything else. Right? Bound, remember, bound is what? I cannot get out of this prison cell, or I cannot get out of this room. Now, if that mind is bound in the grandchild, there's no way that that mind will be able to see their own child. They won't be able to see now, because it's the grandchild has bound the mind. The mind is also not bound. Senses are not bound. Body is not bound. Pure self is not bound. Yet Bhagwan is saying that these gunas bind. Then who is getting bound? The one who is getting bound is the reflection. It is the ego or the jivatma. That is who is getting bound. And now the question arises, okay, this jivatma is getting bound. Is the bondage really real? And I told you in chapter 13 also, what is really real is that which doesn't change in the three periods of time. That is only really real. That's why those who are listening to chapter 2, Sat. Sat is that about which our buddhi never changes, whether it is the past, the present, or the future. And Asat is that about which the buddhi is constantly changing. So this jivatma, it is Asat. It itself is Asat, ego. Why? Reflection is it got a double dependency. I told you in the beginning, reflection is dependent on the sun, reflection is dependent on the medium. It has a double dependency. It itself is not real. If it thinks I'm bound, can it ever be real? The entity who is thinking only is false. This is very deep. Please think. The entity that thinks, body doesn't think, body is inert, body cannot think. And if we think that body is getting bound, then eyes cannot see, that they'll get bound in one color, they will not be able to see it. Mind will get bound in one person or one thing, cannot. Is that our experience? Don't I see a variety of colors all the time, all the time? Don't I hear a variety of sounds? Don't I taste a variety of tastes? So none of my senses are bound to anything. Bondage, remember, means you can't move in the prison cell. Remember, the prisoner in the prison cell, he cannot move. He cannot go out here. That means the senses cannot go to another color. The nose cannot go to another smell. The tongue cannot go to another taste. But that is not my experience. That is not how I experience the world. I am experiencing all different. I'm experiencing joy. Suppose mind was getting bound to joy. Now, 20, 40 years ago, my child was born. And now if my mind was stuck with that, there didn't no other emotion I would have been able to experience. If that mind was bound over there. But it's not. Now, the reflection is what thinks, because the reflection only can think. Why? Because it has borrowed consciousness from the pure consciousness. It has borrowed form from the body. It has borrowed consciousness. Now it can think. It thinks I am very real, and then it thinks I am bound. But it may think it is real, but is it really real? No, it is not. So if itself is not real, then whatever it thinks, how can that be real? It's like in your dream, you may keep on, you know, you might get a great mathematical formula, you might think about it, or you might win a lottery ticket, or you might do n number of things in the dream. Is it real? Once you wake up, nothing is real. All those ideas, all those thoughts that you got in dream, they're only an illusion. Because why? The dreamer was an illusion. So whatever that dreamer acquired, thought, did, is an illusion. So same way, the reflection itself is an illusion. Whatever it thinks, it may think I'm bound, I am free. Whatever it thinks, any thinking that goes on is illusory. The other thing is about bondage. If the bondage, what is the definition of sata? What is the definition of really real? That which does not change in the three periods of time. So if the bondage was really real, can you ever end it? If bondage was real, that's why I'm using really real, it could never have ended. But all spiritual masters are saying, Bhagwan is saying, it can end, it can end, it can end. That means it is false. It has to be mithya. False means not like horns of a rabbit, but mithya. Mithya means what? That which is experienced, but it has an end. That's why prakriti. Prakriti has an end. Prakriti is also beginningless, we say. Pure consciousness is also beginningless. Then what is the difference between prakriti and pure consciousness? Pure consciousness does not end. Prakriti ends. Because prakriti is avidya. Okay. Any questions? Now this reflection, see here it says dehe dehinam avyayam. So this dehinam, who is actually avyayam, means actually it is pure consciousness, actually it is kshetrajna, right? Why? Because that it is a reflection of kshetrajna, na? So actually what is in the body, so as though bound, so how can kshetrajna get bound? That's why that word eva is very important in Vedanta, as though. So it appears like I am bound. But actually, if I come to know that I am the big I am the pure consciousness, as opposed to the small I, which is the ego or the reflection or chidabhasa, technical language, chidabhasa, jivatma. If I keep on thinking that I am jivatma, I will keep on thinking that I am bound. But the minute I come to know that I am that pure self, there is no bondage. There is no more bondage. That is moksha. That is mukti. Any questions? Clear? After this, it gets very easy. This part has to be understood very clearly.
Jayaji? Jayaji?
Yes.
When they talk about this embodied, what exactly do they mean by embodied? Like here he's saying dehinam embodied.
Avyayam. Embodied is the one who is with body. Now who is with the body is the pure consciousness. Kutastha, the Sakshi Chaitanya. With form. Okay. Actually it is kshetrajna, it is formless. Actually it is formless. But it appears to be as if in the body, because the body is asat. It appears, that's why eva. Dehinam. That's why it says Dehinam Avyayam. Avyaya means what? Which never gets destroyed. So that's why you have to understand that Dehina to be Kshetranya. But Kshetranya is pure consciousness, is one which is not getting destroyed ever. It is Sat. It is present in the three periods of time. Mm-hmm. But because of the superimposition, because of this notion that I am the body, I am the body, mind, and intellect. That's why Bhagavan Shankaracharya, or even Upanishad, says neti neti. That's why you have to keep asserting, I am not the body, I am something else, I am something else, I am something else. That's why Vivek Churamani, the description of Sat starts with asti. Asti, that's a very important word. There is something other than the body, mind, and intellect. Please understand. Please understand. And if you think that body, mind, intellect is everything, then that's it. That is bondage. And you're bound forever. Because then what happens is, I think I am the body. Then I will go on nourishing. Now it will come in Vivek Churamani. Those verses will come. Then because I am body, then I have to nourish my body. I have to keep take care of it because it's me. So whatever happens to the body is happening to me. That's why I told you, you have to understand that it is happening to the body. It is not happening to me because I am the pure self.
Okay. Jayaji, body, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Jayaji, this is Padmaja. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So some people, we all have different tastes, like taste for sattvic food, taste for rajasic food. So those are all, they are also binding in a way.
That is now, not in a way, definitely binding now. That is what is coming.
Yeah, but then you say that it's not real.
Exactly.
It's there with that person.
I think it is real, no?
Yeah, we think it's real.
Ah, that is where the problem is. The thinking is the problem. Thinking is the problem. That's why we have to think like this. That is it. And then now Bhagwan is going to explain how each guna binds. And we're going to see how it is a bondage and how it will not be a bondage. See, we have to see that also, na? How it will... See, there is a book. Actually, I was going to... There is a book called... Swami Vimalananda has written it. Is it not too tight, not too loose, just right? Tripti, is that the one? Right?
Not correct? Too loose, not too tight.
Yes, just right. Just okay, right. That is the title of the book. I actually had decided, I will, one of, next Monday maybe, I'll look at. So that is a small booklet, just a small booklet, and that gives you, it's an excellent book. It tells you sleep. How sleep can be sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Eating, how it can be sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Every action, it gives you the three levels. That same, because you see, same, the action is only one. How do you make it sattvic? How is it? That's why I told you, like tulsi plant, if you like tulsi plant, and if you grow that tulsi plant in your house, it indicates you have a sattvic mind, but you want something fragrant, you know, tickling my senses, it indicates a rajasic mind. So that book is very, very good. So you can, I have a few copies, anybody wants, I can send them. It's a small booklet, you know, not too tight, not too loose, not too tight, just right. That is the name, Swamini Vimalananda. So that, and now these next verses will tell us how the gunas bind, because we have to know how they bind, and then we have to know how to get out of it. The goal is to get out of the gunas. Okay, you can't get out of the gunas, but you can get out of the bondage that they can create. So how do they create? So the first verse, six, means number six, is sattva. How does sattva bind? How does rajas bind? And how does tamas bind? That is how Bhagwan is going to go. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakamanamayam sukhasangena badnati jnana sangena chanagha. Of these, sattva, which because of its stainlessness is luminous and healthy, binds by attachment to happiness and by attachment to knowledge, O sinless one. So the name used for Arjun here is Anagha. Agha means paap, sin. anagha means sinless. Now here sin means rajas and tamas. Know that among the three, one more point which I wanted to mention in the previous verse when I was talking about the three gunas. In our mind, and it's like that, and yeah, in a way we say that also. We say sattva is better than rajas and rajas is better than tamas. Okay, this is what we say. What this chapter is going to do for us is going to tell us that no, there is no such hierarchy because all three bind. So how can you say sattva is better? Sattva also binds, rajas also binds. Okay, that's number one. All three bind. Second is you need all three. Now, how can tamas is not good? Okay, so I don't want my vocal cords. But how am I going to speak then? So you need all three. So that hierarchy, we shouldn't, it is actually like, of course, even I'm going to say that it is better to be in a predominance of sattva than in rajas and tamas. And that way we say that sattva is better because we say sattva is closest to the pure self. Okay, so it's better to have a predominance of sattva than have a predominance of rajas or a predominance of tamas. But please understand that depending on the circumstances, like if you have had surgery and if you are admitted to hospital, you must invoke tamas. At that time, you'll be thankful for that tamoguna because you want to be asleep most of the time. Not if there's a period of rajas, how many people should I, Are Baba, you're, you know, IV and catheter and whatnot is going on and now you want to phone people. Not good. Not good. So you see, it depends on the times. It's late at night, you're tired, you're sleepy. Tomorrow I've got class. Let me read my verses now. What's the point? What is the point? There is no point. That's what we have to understand. And the gunas, I have always said that, and I always see the gunas are like three servants that we have. Now, if you're the master and they are the servant, who should be listening to who? Should the master be listening to the servant or should the servant be listening to the master? Where are we now? We are the servant and these three are the masters. So tamas in the morning when we are supposed to get up, sleep now, it's raining. You can't go for a run anyways, sleep, it's okay. It's COVID, there is nothing to do in the rest of the day, sleep, tamas. So I have become a servant of tamas. Or when it's time for me to study, I know there is a class coming up. Hurry, let me clean the house now. I am servant. Why? Because actually I need sattva to sit quietly and read. I need sattva. So you must be in charge. And whatever is needed, you must be able to recall. Okay, I am in the hospital. I am admitted. I have just had surgery. I want tamas. I want tamas. And that's why that hierarchy, that part has to be remembered. Depending on the circumstances, you must be able to recall 111 servant. These three are your servants. If you can do that, you have transcended them. But if you're a servant, then what transcend? They are ruling you. Then there is no point. So now, here. Sinless one. Yeah, sin is rajas and tamas. So for Arjun, Bhagwan says that you have a predominance of sattva. We have seen that. Arjun was sattvic, even in the first chapter. Arjun was sattvic, but he got deluded and he fell into rajas and tamas. But predominance of sattva was there. Also later on in chapter 16, Arjun will, because there he will, Bhagwan will talk of divine and demonic qualities. Now Arjun will say, oh Bhagwan, where am I, divine or demon? Then Bhagwan says, no, you don't worry. You have got divine qualities. So divine qualities are coming from sattva. So there also Bhagwan will say, anagha word will come again in chapter 15. Also he will call Arjun anagha. So sattva, it is stainlessness. So it's very pure. When there is a predominance of sattva, the rajas and tamas are very minimal. It's I've given you this example before. There is a glass of water and it is salty. You know, there's too much salt in it. So how do I reduce that saltiness? I will pour pure water into it so much that ultimately the salt will become very, very minimal. Okay, so when there is a predominance of sattva, this sattva is very pure. stainless. That's what Bhagavan is saying. Means there is not rajas and tamas in it. Then what happens is this person gets attached to happiness. Now, this happiness must be understood correctly also. This happiness is the happiness which is arising out of, you know, when you're alone, you're very happy. Most people feel lonely and they're unhappy. And they look for, who should I phone? Which show should I watch? Where should I drive to? How come nobody is calling me? That sort of happiness when the person is looking for, where there is contact of the sense organs with something else, that happiness is coming from rajas. But this happiness where the senses are, they're not bothered. TV, no problem. This no problem. Aram says, so see bhajans. Guruji also once, I asked him, how do we get up? I am quite attached to my sattvic sukha, let me tell you, because I live by myself. I have a strict routine. So, I follow that routine. And then everything, today was a very sattvic day for me. And I'll tell you, in the morning I woke up, I went for a run. It wasn't raining. Last 2 days it was raining. I couldn't run. So I ran, came back, had a nice sattvic breakfast, only fruit and yogurt. So it's a very, very sattvic kind of a breakfast. Then I sat and read. Then I called Mrs. Kapaya. I thought I better check on her. So once a week or twice a week, I check on her. So I did. That means I did the right thing. I did my duty. So I feel very good about. See, this is the happiness that we get because we're doing the right thing. So I did that. Then I sat and I read. I prepared my lecture. I thought I better prepare. I haven't read. So I read. So very, very sattvic. Then I had lunch. Then I went for my walk, my remaining steps. Ah, ha, ha, ha. So it gives me great pleasure that, this is my sankalpa, that I'll walk so much. Now I have completed it. Absolute no dependence on anybody else. No phoning. That was only one phone call that I initiated. No other phone calls. No TV. I have not the same. Then I had a nice sattvic lunch. Then I went for a walk. Then I came back. Then I rested because sleepy. So I said, I better sleep. Then I woke up. Then I read, my daily reading is there, some 6-7 books. And so I read that, fine. So happy, happy, happy. Then I read Vivek Chudamani, happy, happy, happy. Then I had dinner and then I came and nicely sat here. So it's now this is what we get attached to. So where is the bondage here? The bondage is if someday I cannot do this routine and I get upset. That is bondage. Because there will be days when this Monday is the most best day for me because I don't have any other things. Tuesday, I have something. Wednesday, I have something. Every other day, I have something. So what happens is I cannot follow this routine. This is what I would like to do. This is what I am attached to. I like it when I'm by myself. I can do as much reading as I want. I like all that. Now I'm getting attached to it. And how do I know that I'm bound? Getting attached that way is not a problem. You know why? Because it's my discipline. So I want to be attached to that discipline. Because if I'm not attached to that discipline, then morning, okay, TK, today I need not get up. Okay, then I don't have to do, let me eat something else. This, that, all these variations will come. But I should not get disturbed when this routine cannot be followed. So the first thing, if I have any medical appointments, which are early in the morning, boom, my routine is out the door. And there's nothing I can do. If the specialist is going to phone me, you better show up at this time. I show up at that time, right? Yeah. So that is what bondage is. Getting upset is what bondage is. So please understand. Please understand what is bondage is. I must... Not if I'm getting upset, then I'm bound to that happiness. That without that sort of a routine, I cannot be happy. That is bondage. That is bondage. You understand? That's why I'm explaining to you. Know that I'm bound. How do I know? I have to know. And that's why sometimes when the routine doesn't, I'm fine. Suppose tomorrow this same routine I cannot follow. I'm telling you, tomorrow is my grocery day. I have to go to Rajas. I need Rajas. I need food in the fridge. I have to go. That's fine. That's fine. If I can do that. Or if I have a guest, my daughter comes, full routine out the door. because my life is revolving around her schedule. You know, she's working, then she's phone calls, her breakfast, her this, which is fine. Right? So as long as I'm fine, if that routine breaks, I am not bound. But if I'm not fine, if I'm going to say, oh God, you know, why I'm getting bound. And the other thing, sukha sangena, that's why this is the sukha, okay? It is not a sukha born out of I went for a movie and I was happy, or I went and met friends, I called so many people. That is rajasic sukha. That is rajas. So this is sattva. Jnana sangena, so knowledge, you know? So there is reading. I could have been reading novels. Then that's rajasic. Or I could have watched news. That way I get the knowledge of whatever is happening in around the world. Rajas. But what I'm reading is only spiritual books. I don't do any other reading anymore. I used to do a lot of reading. Trust me. A lot of reading I have done, and then I've given it up. I just gave it up, and I don't have a single book which is not related to Vedanta in one way or the other. I have other books by other authors, like Power of Now or whatever, but that's all related. It has to be related. Only that I read. Otherwise, I don't read at all. I don't read newspaper. I don't read news, right? So this is how I'm bound to this knowledge. But if I cannot read someday, if I cannot take class someday, I should not get happy. I should not get unhappy. Summer, I'll be very happy. No class. No. But... Or in summer, I should not get, oh God, now 2 months, what am I going to do? I don't have a class to teach, right? I shouldn't be unhappy. If I am unhappy, I am bound. Okay? And you must, when there is a need to read, you must be able to call sattva. When there is a need to do something, you must be able to call rajas. When there is a need to rest, you must invoke tamas. If you can do that, you have transcended the goodness. Okay? All right. Rajo ragatmakam vidhi trishna sanga samudbhavam tanni badnati kaunteya karma sangena dehinam. Know thou, Rajas, to be of the nature of passion, the source of thirst and attachment. It binds fast, O Kaunteya, the embodied one, by attachment to action. So once again, Vinita, this word has come, the embodied one, Dehi. Dehi. Actually, like once again, I'm telling you again, is that the Dehi is actually the pure consciousness. Actually, it is pure consciousness. But because it gets identified because of delusion to the body, it is called as Dehi. It is not a Dehi actually, but it thinks it is a Dehi. I think I am the body, and that's why. And this Raga, that which shines, I think Swami Ishwananji gave this meaning. So of colors, Ranjanat Raga. So this Rajas is, it needs variety. Variety, you know, rajasic mind will need a variety. There are these endless desires because no trishna sanga sama. Trishna is a thirst, a deep sense of want. I want that, you know, where your vasanas are pushing you. That's something I cannot live without. One who has transcended the gunas must never say, I cannot live without this. Even sattvas, that's why sattva binds. If I say I cannot live without this routine every single day, I'm bound. I'm bound to that routine. And that's how sattva binds. That's why sattva binds to happiness and knowledge. Now, rajas is binding to, rajas has a lot of desires in the mind. There's a lot of thirst, actually. First is thirst. Thirst is a want. So that, what is it, what, because I consider myself to the body, that's why Vivek Churamani Bhagwan will say, you consider yourself to the body, then you have to nourish it, you have to fatten it, you have to take care of it. And for the body, you need n number of things. And then for those n number of things, for those n number of desires, you will perform n plus one actions. And that is what Rajas is pushing you into, is action. And that is, you get bound to the action itself. So when you are asked to leave that action, you are unhappy, very unhappy. Retirement, that's why they say, from the first day of your job, start preparing for retirement. Why do people find it so difficult to retire? There are so many people, bank I have seen, within 2 years, dead. They couldn't handle it. They can't handle retirement. At 65, 66, I hear, gone. So that's why this retirement, that's why that withdrawal has to come. So you were Rajasic all your life, but you know that you have to retire someday and you must be prepared for it. And this is what I, karma sangena dehinam. So he gets bound to action itself. And when that action, and then because of action, because there is desire, there is action, there is passion here, there is a word, right? Passion or no? Nature of passion, huh? Be of the nature of passion. There are two words. There is one is passion and one is this thirst. This thirst is wanting something that I don't have. Thirst, I have a thirst for something, right? It's a want for something that I don't have. And passion is a fondness for what I have. So what I'm going to do is what I don't have is I'm going to perform action to get it. And then when I get it, because of my passion for it, because of my fondness for it, I'm going to do action to preserve it. Both these things, therefore, they bind. They are the manifestation of Rajoguna. That's, you know, Rajoguna is basically running. How does the running happen? Either I walk in, first of all, the world is a superimposition, okay? Rope and snake. All right. So I walk into a room and there is a rope actually, but I see a snake, I run away from the snake out of fear. Or I see a garland and I run towards the garland. And both are rajas. Both are, because this rajas is not seeing clearly that it is a rope. World is not being seen as something asat. World is being seen as a source of my joy, my happiness. So therefore, I run towards the things which I think will give me happiness. That's only a thought. I think this object, this person, this situation will give me happiness. So I run after that. And I think that this person, situation, object is going to give me sorrow. So I run away. And rajas will constantly keep running, make you run. And then what happens is, because I'm performing action, action will give result. Result will give more vasanas, and more vasanas will give you more births. That's where the bondage comes. Okay. And in sattva, please remember, you might say, oh, sattva, there is no action. You're just bound to that. Yes, but I am unhappy that I don't have that particular situation. Like, you know, I'm by myself and I can do whatever that I want and I do all the right things. Then I feel very happy about myself. Oh, I did all the right things today. I didn't do anything wrong. So that when I get upset about it, that is creating a vasana. It's creating an impression. Living that life is not creating any impression. But when I get upset, when that lifestyle is no longer there available for me, or maybe it, for some reason for that day it is not available and I'm very upset, then I have created a groove. And that is how it binds. Bondage is in the form of rebirth. That's why most of us don't even understand what bondage. I'm not bound. I can freely do whatever that I want. They don't even understand that rebirth is bondage. Any questions? It's clear?
Jayaji?
Yes.
So what is the best way to try not to get attached? Is like, you know, sometimes last time saying that you need discipline. Should we have discipline but constantly vary things or do it according to somebody else's schedule to try not get attached to the schedule?
No. Discipline is very necessary. And I've told you the insignia of a spiritual seeker is self-discipline, but discipline should be as per your schedule. Don't keep a discipline as per my schedule. My schedule is very, very different. Okay. So you have your own, you may have children, you may have a job, you may have a business. whatever that you have, as per that, you maintain that discipline. The best thing is to do what is exactly your duty.
Right.
Okay. And then what happens is sometimes that duty can change. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, I get up and I go for a run, but if I have an appointment, early morning appointment, I had an appointment last week, 7:30 in the morning. There's no way. All I did was get up, take a shower and go for that appointment, right? Mm-hmm. So then that becomes my duty to keep that appointment.
Right.
Because it is for my health.
So there's not too much you can do in terms of not getting attached.
One way of not getting attached is by knowledge.
Right.
Okay. By knowing that whoever is getting attached is a false entity. That yes. is the best way. You know that that ego is false.
So to give you an example, when you were describing your schedule, I find myself being not upset, but a little bit off center if I'm not able to follow what I want to do. Now, whether it is reading or following, like, you know, listening to a lecture or not being able to attend a class. So that obviously means I am attached. So what do I do to break that cycle?
You say that you are getting off center, right? So at least you're not getting upset. Try not to be as upset by accepting the fact that this is what happened, so I could not do this.
Okay.
And as long as that is a valid reason, you will not be upset. Like I said, if I have a doctor's appointment, that's the most valid reason that I can have. But if I decide to sleep in and then not do it, that must make you upset.
Okay.
So why have I broken this routine?
Yeah. Okay.
Because of that. Like I said, you know, so that's why each one has to see.
Okay. But thank you.
But sometimes we undertake too many things also.
Yes. And
we get, we spread ourselves so thin that we don't know where to go. And I've seen, like, and it used to happen with me too. Like, I was not able to say no to people, you know, because you just want to do. And then you realize that it's not working for you. And in fact, actually, even the people you say yes to, after a while, they also get choked if you don't always say yes to them, because they're used to your saying yes to them.
Yes.
So I think for us, we have to also sort of set up in our own minds, like, boundaries, and we have to decide what are the priorities that we need to address, and then work with those routines.
Yes. And that is a rajasic tendency. When you want to say yes to everything and everybody, that's why in chapter 18, Bhagwan will talk of pravritti and nivritti. When to engage and when to disengage, that discrimination is extremely important. Extremely. That's why when people come to retirement age, they can't disengage. You have to be ready, like that autumn leaf. That's why we give the example of that autumn leaf. How easily it separates from the tree. How easily? There's absolutely painless. That's how that separation from work life should happen. That's why first pravritti and leading into nivritti. That is how Bhagavad Gita teaches us.
Jayaji,
you have to know your own this thing. Yes.
Jayaji, how can we invoke a guna? I mean, if you want to invoke, you want say rajas or tamas, or you want to invoke a guna, how can you do that? How can one learn to do that?
Surrender to the Lord, because the gunas are under his control. So surrender. One way is surrender. First thing is to know which guna you need and which guna is becoming predominant. Mm-hmm. Know that. Okay, so that discrimination has to come first. What do I need now? Do I need tamas, or do I need rajas, or do I need sattva? So first you determine which one you need, and then you determine, okay, what exactly is happening? Am I, you know, I need rajas, but I don't feel like working. Sometimes what happens is the rajas work is to be done, but I feel like reading. I read because I know that at there will be another time when rajas will predominate. And at that time, I take advantage of that rajas, and then I do all the work that I have to do. Otherwise, I just read one thing or the other, kind of. So first know, and then say, oh Lord, you know, now I need tamas. Now I need to sleep. I need to rest. I need to, you know, this thing. So that way.
No, thank you.
You can decide in advance also. Like, okay, like after my vaccination, I decided I'm going to come home, eat lunch. No cooking. I'd cooked it already, warmed it up. And I said, I'm going to sleep 2 hours. Because everybody said rest after I rest. So I thought I better rest, you know, not to get a So 2 hours. I never sleep for 2 hours in the afternoon. Never. But that day I had decided. I had decided, okay, 11 o'clock is my appointment. I'm going to come home, eat lunch, go to sleep. And that's what I did. And I was happy. In the evening, I went for a walk. I was fine, right? So you can decide as per your schedule.
Sometimes if you have some good quotations also, like, you know, Gurudev's calendar has like
calendar some
quotations. Yeah. And, you know, when you're kind of feeling lazy and you don't really want to study or follow up with something, if you look at the calendar, like his, you know, unto
him our best.
Yeah. You know, or like the Nike motto, just do it. You know, even things like that, they motivate you to get out of the rut.
But better than the calendar is that Evergreen Messages. Get that book. That has got 365 messages for the 365 days. And the best thing is in the morning, keep it by your night table. And in the morning, that day, you read that message. And then whole day, you keep, it's all very, very excellent messages are there.
What does it?
The book is called Evergreen Messages. If you guys want it, I have copies of that. And the other book, please remember, I will next time what I'll do is I'll look it up. It's in my shelf. Not too loose, not too tight, just right. So these are the two titles that, you know, will help. Okay. All right. So we'll meet next Monday.
Janiji, earlier you said Prakriti has to come to an end. Isn't it part of the whole two sides of a coin?
What?
And Purusha.
Prakriti and Purusha are not two sides of a coin, because Purusha is not a pair of one of the side of the coin. Purusha is everything.
Yeah, but Prakriti isn't part of it.
Negating the Shruti Vakya that Satchitananda is partless. It has a part, you're saying. So you've negated the Shruti statement and you cannot do that. You cannot compromise what Upanishads have said. And Upanishads have said that it is one partless, homogeneous mass of consciousness. So if you say Prakriti is a part of Purusha, you have negated that line and you cannot negate it. You know what Prakriti is in simple terms? Let me tell you. Okay, I've told you this before, but again, I'm not going to forget. So I have eyes. I mean, all of you have eyes. I have eyes, and then I have the power of seeing. Is the power of seeing a part of me, or is it me, or is it different from me? Hand is a part of me. Okay. And therefore the hand can be amputated. It can get damaged. It can this thing. Power, can I leave my power? My power of speech is there. Now, could I have just left the power of speech over here and gone watch TV and let the power, okay, you give the lecture. I am going watching TV.
But when creation occurs, where, like you said, you need Prakriti.
Yes. Prakriti is the one definition of Prakriti is the inherent power of the Lord.
So it is part of the Lord.
No. In the pure consciousness, Prakriti is as though not there. It's not there. That's why Om is beyond the gunas. Prakriti is the three gunas, and Om is where? Om is on top of the V, vasanas. That's why we have to transcend the gunas. When it says transcend gunas, transcend Prakriti.
Jayaji, question. Why do we say that Shakti is part of
Shiva?
Shiva.
See, the Puranas are depicting Shiva means, once you say Shiva, it's a form. So you have come down from the Upanishadic Satchit Ananda, you have come down from it a notch. You have given it a form. Once you give it a form, then yeah, then Shakti is a part, Shakti is his wife, Parvati is his consort. Everything comes with form, with form. But you've come down. You've come down. Okay? Think about it and we'll meet next Monday. Om Swasti Prajabhyav Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Gobrahmanebhya Shubhamastu Nityam Loka Samastha Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yam Kshobarahita Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarvesham Swasti Bhavatu Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Maka कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ हरि ओम् एव्रीबडी आई शॉल सी यू नेक्स्ट